name's Michelle Ovo and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another project. The date today is the 25th of August 2009 and the time is now 9:23 a.m. Could I ask you your name, your age and where you come from, please?
My name's David Benny, but I prefer to be known as Benny rather than David. I'm 57 and I live in North London.
And how are you feeling?
As we were saying a couple of minutes ago, a bit amused, a bit bemused, curious, I think is probably the best way to describe it in a single word.
Why curious, would you say?
By definition, I've never done anything like this before. It's even more so in my case because I'm a last minute replacement. I think most people get about a month's notice or thereabouts and they have a time to work out what they want to do. They may well have had a fairly firm concept before they even applied or whatever. And I was phoned on Friday afternoon, it's now Tuesday morning, and asked if I could come. And I thought, yeah, fine, I've got a fairly flexible life, I can fit that in fairly easily. But I had no time to prepare. So my thoughts when I first applied months ago were that for me, Trafalgar Square is all about, you know, political protest. I've probably been here dozens or hundreds of times in the course of the last 40 years or so for one reason or another. And I thought I ought to do something related to that in some way or other, but I say with only two or three days to go, I had various ideas in my head, but what I actually did in the end was I sent an email to the Climate Camp organisation, and they started organising themselves to connect with me on this. So to a certain extent, I don't know what's going to happen when I go up there. I've just been given a bag of goodies, which I'll do my best to display when I'm up on the plinth.
Do you know what those are?
Banners, flags, a tent, things like this. So I mean, I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out practically until I get up there.
Why did you choose Climate Camp? Any particular reason?
Firstly because they're going to be having a major action starting in a couple of days' time, so the timing was absolutely perfect. Secondly, I thought they were the sort of people who'd be capable of gearing up. I mean, I've gone through a variety of political phases over my life. I'm not really a person who joins organisations. I'm a bit too individualistic for that. I've been aware of Climate Camp for a while. I like their style. I like the fact that they're extremely informal and non-hierarchical and that sort of thing. So they seem that sort of bunch I could operate with, even though I had no formal contact with them. I'm not a member or an activist as such, but I'm the sort of person who gets involved in things of that sort anyway. And I had been broadly thinking that I might well attend the Climate Camp, not as for a full week type process, but what will happen, as far as I understand it, is that tomorrow or next day they will be clustering in 10 different places around London, and in order to confuse the police, and will then pick. They will know somebody among the organisation will know where they're going to occupy, and people will then suddenly swoop on that and take over that place. And their aim will be to occupy a certain location or place or space or whatever for 4, 5, 6, 7 days. When that happens, it'll get plenty of press publicity, and I'll find out where it is, and then I can go along to it. That was my thinking. I would go along for a day or two and sort of soak in the atmosphere, but now it seems like I'm going to be a bit more involved in that than I intended, which suits me fine.
You mentioned that you've been in the square on numerous occasions before for all kinds of events.
Yeah.
Could you tell me about some of those? What were you
doing here? I mean, I say most of it were political events of some sort or other. I mean, I was 16 in 1968. Which was a year of revolutions and uprisings and so on throughout the world. And I think it formed my worldview. A couple of years later, I was a student at London School of Economics in its most radical phase. I think it's terribly mainstream these days. And political protest was almost a sort of daily or weekly event there. If something happened, we'd be out on the streets. It was just instinctive almost. And in fact, I mean, the first incident I can recall of that sort around here was around about the time of the Bloody Sunday incident in Northern Ireland. And I remember, we were in college, this occurred on a Sunday morning, we were all in a state of shock when we got into college the next day, and we simply marched on Parliament. We dug out a few banners, a few hundred people gathered, and we simply marched on Parliament. You could do that in those days. I mean, there were far less restrictions. I mean, year by year, over a period of 20, 30, 40 years, especially after Thatcher and present Labour government got into power, there have been restrictions on the rights of political protest. But it was much more flexible in those days. And certainly a few weeks after that, there was a huge demonstration relating to Bloody Sunday. And I can remember there were sort of 13 coffins being carried by the demonstrators, and they were trying to force their way into Downing Street in the days before they had the metal rail, you know, the gates and so on. So that was my sort of, vaguely, my earliest memory of political demonstrations in the square. And after that, I mean, there's so many things passed through. There were CND marches, there were the poll tax riot. I mean, I was here for the poll tax riot, but didn't even actually know there was a riot going on because the demonstration was so big. You only knew what was going on immediately around you. Most of it was actually fairly quiet, but there was some, you know, there was a lot of incident, you know, the press focus on the really sort of dramatic bits. And I say, if you were one street away, you wouldn't have had a clue what was going on. And that's often the nature of what happens in a large crowd. I also remember there was a big sort of a May Day anarchist thing. I just turned up because I think I had nothing else better to do that day. They were, you know, giving Winston Churchill a Mohican haircut down in Parliament Square and things like that. So it's not as though, when I was a student, I seemed to be out on demonstrations every few weeks. Now I'm in my 50s, it happens maybe once or twice a year, there's something, you know, against the Iraq war, whatever it's going to be, something will turn up that seems important enough to make an effort to come out. But as often as not, they seem to end up in Trafalgar Square. So for me, that's what Trafalgar Square is mainly about.
How do you think today's experience will compare with those previous?
It won't compare at all. It'll be something completely different. But unusually for me, I'll be some sort of vaguely focal point for what's going on. Now, we'll be waving a banner on top of a huge plinth, and, which will be, you know, a different sort of experience.
Have you regarded yourself in the past as somebody who was an observer, bystander, if you like, at some of those rallies or demonstrations, rather than somebody who was in the midst of things?
I've been in more focal roles, but usually on smaller, more localised activities. And I've, for want of a better term, led in certain situations and followed in other situations. I've never been as part of an organised political sect of one sort or another, which is you know, with its hierarchies and its structures, which has never really suited me. My Trotskyist friends used to call me an anarchist, and my anarchist friends used to call me a Trotskyist. I was never quite one or the other.
How would you describe yourself?
Politically or?
No, as a person.
Oh, it's funny, because I was asked for a 3-word description when I was told I was going to be on here. I just said a 70s style lefty. But that's, you know, that's only one part of any person, and one can't describe oneself that simply. I mean, I am to a certain extent in despair about the mess that human beings are creating with this planet and with society in general. As a student in the 70s and the years immediately following, we simply sought to change the world, and we thought it seemed so obvious to us that things had to change in the direction they would take. They've not taken the direction I wanted them to take. I mean, I think the Green Movement is a fairly natural successor to the sort of politics that we had at that time. Feminism at its peak was another natural strand, and both of those have had a degree of success. I was never a hardline socialist, but I am very much a believer in equality, which has almost seemed to be thrown out the window in the society in which I live. So my politics haven't changed dramatically over the years, but my belief in, you know, my optimism has. I mean, I'm working now on the assumption that I will not see a better world in my lifetime. And so partly a result of that, I had to find other outlets, things that would give me satisfaction in one form or another. And that led to an increase in my interest in the arts in general, which is part of the renote. So when I first applied for this, it's because I'd been in the National Gallery, I'd seen the original display of the proposals for the current fourth plinth projects, and this seemed rather more interesting ones. I mean, I can't remember which one I voted for offhand. It might have been this one, it might have been one of the others, but I mean, I'm not actually a huge fan of contemporary art, and most of it I find pretentious and not particularly artistic. My particular area of interest in recent years has been Indian art, classical Indian art or traditional Indian art. I collect small Indian old bronze sculptures. I've been to India many times. So what am I? I'm a very politically conscious traveller, arty type. I mean, you know, how does one define those things?
When did you start to become interested in the arts?
I can pin it down almost precisely. In 1975, I spent 4 months hitchhiking around Europe, just with a rucksack on my back and a ground sheet and a sleeping bag, sleeping up, you know, like a tramp more or less, and extremely ignorant. I remember I got to Barcelona and couldn't tell the difference between the Gothic cathedral and Gaudi's Sagrada Familia. And I couldn't speak a word of any other foreign language. It was all a bit strange. And that following winter, I took out the library, a huge thick book on sort of European architectural history. And the next year when I did a shorter hitching trip, I was actually trying to pin down some interesting old buildings and so on and so forth. And it was almost precisely at that point that I began to take a very serious interest in art, art history and the like. And that's been 30 or so years ever since. Yes, it's a continuing process. Sadly, I've never actually produced much in the way of art myself. I haven't developed the technical skills, and that I find a bit inhibiting.
Are you working at the moment?
No, I was made redundant from a job on a community regeneration scheme a year or two ago. I was made redundant because it is in my nature. I seem to be temperamentally incapable of doing as I'm told. So they found a way of keeping me on full pay for a year at home and then made me redundant. But I've always lived very simply. Whenever I have been working, I've saved plenty of money. And I reckon that I can survive if I live frugally until I get my pension. And I'm not desperately seeking work. I think, when people ask me, you know, I say I'm not quite sure whether I'm early retired or unemployed, because I haven't, you know, stated to myself I will never work again, but I mean, I think it's entirely possible it won't happen. And most people, it seems to me, work in order to obtain things they don't need. And I don't need that much, so I can get by.
Whereabouts did you grow up?
Very close to where I live now. I grew up in Finsbury Park. And at that time, it was an extremely poor working class area, and mine was an extremely poor working class family. It doesn't sound like it because I've at some point along the course of things, I've acquired a middle class accent, probably through going to university and so on and so forth. But my brothers and sisters still have strong Cockney accents. And, you know, we were almost absurdly poor, and it would have been a sort of social worker's case study in some time ways at the time. We were there for 10 years. We moved to Forest Gate for 4 years, then to Romford for a few years. And then I ended up back in the Finsbury Park because Finsbury Park had changed to become a student area. You see what I mean? So, and then I squatted in the area a bit later than that. And sort of, it seemed that the area sort of became more or less like, sort of, you know, it seemed to change with me. Then it became a bit too expensive for me. I've ended up a mile or so along the road in Tottenham, which is sort of the poor person's Finsbury Park.
Do your brothers and sisters ever talk to you? Journeys in some way?
I have very little contact with them. I phoned one of my sisters yesterday evening to let her know I'd be doing this, that she could watch me on the website, because I haven't seen any of my siblings in years. I left home when I was 20. I was the oldest, and took a different direction. And with one exception, we don't get on too bad, but we just don't have very much in common. One brother became a policeman and an ardent Thatcherite, and we've never had any contact in the last 20 or 30 years, but that's another matter entirely. But the others, it's just, there was actually a family wedding of a niece a month or so ago, and I wasn't able to make it. But as I said to my sister, I didn't actually know my niece. If she'd sat next to me on the bus, I wouldn't have recognised her. I seem to have, through my life, had more interest in the friends that I've ended up choosing or acquired in the course of life than the people I happen to be brought up with by blood relationship when I was younger. It just seems another phase of my life.
Do Was your dad politically active?
No, not at all. He was a small and large C conservative. He was a blind. He was a pub piano player who knew the craze because he played in all the pubs in the East End. And he was, you know, he was a wheeler dealer, always doing little things which were sometimes legal and sometimes illegal. And he probably would have been a very capable individual had he not been blind at the age of 8. And was just a I mean, he died when I was relatively young, about 19. I was in the first year at college. And we were certainly in total conflict at that time as I had taken a very different direction. Who knows how things might have been if they'd gone on later than that. But I think I've realised over the years that he probably had more influence on me than I properly realised. I mean, he was very Jewish. He was in his own way very political. I mean, he was very politically aware. I mean, he listened to the radio and he had opinions which very different to mine. And he had that Jewish thing about, I don't know, arguing and getting involved in things and all the rest of it, which has certainly rubbed off on me. And although we weren't brought up at all religiously, I remember years ago being at a friend's restaurant birthday meal, and there were two or three of us who were sort of quarter Jewish or whatever. And I said, I don't know whether I'd regard myself as Jewish or not. And this acquaintance said to me, Benny, if anyone's Jewish, you're Jewish.
Why?
I think because of my mannerisms or the fact that I'm, you know, talkative individual, all the rest of it, and I say argumentative and an opinionated individual, that sort of thing.
Do you find it difficult to get on with someone if you don't agree with their politics? Do you have any friends where that is the case?
No. I may have an interesting conversation with a stranger, and I may find that curious, but I would not choose to have a friend who had a completely different worldview. I wouldn't establish a friendship. There are, of course, there's a complete, spectrum. I mean, I don't expect someone to agree on everything. No, nobody would. I would not have a friend who was a Tory. It's as straightforward as that. But I'm not going to sort of be. I'm not, being a sect member. I've never been much more precise than that. Someone who didn't have a broad perspective similar to mine would not be a person I would make any great effort to become friends. Of course, you work with people who have a different sort of perspective, and you get on tolerably well with them in their work context and that sort of thing. But I know that that's not the way as I am.
What was it specifically about this project that appealed to you, do you think?
I doubt that I gave an enormous amount of thought to it. I mean, I saw the display in the National Gallery. I then saw one or two references to it in the press as if that was actually gearing up. There was a website address or whatever, so I thought I'd check it out. I thought, why not? It's a 1 in 10 or 20 chance among those who apply. Sort of, it's nice to inject a sort of random element into one's life, and it's been particularly random in this case because I was phoned at 2 or 3 days' notice. I think it's as good a way of using the plinth as any. My own preference for the plinth has been the more clearly defined sculptural works that have appeared on there. The Alison Lapham, was that her name, piece? And I've forgotten his name, Bill Woodrow or something? The tree that was going down. They were the ones that I particularly liked. I like... My preference is for figurative art, but often modernist figurative art, if you see what I mean. So both of those fitted in fairly readily into that, but modernist rather than contemporary, if you see what I mean. I like things that, to a certain extent, deal with the human condition. And I suppose this is in its own way, but it's not such an obviously visual way.
Are you looking forward to it?
I say, I'm curious. I'm going to be up there for an hour. It will pass probably relatively quickly. I've got two or three friends who are probably going to be turning up, one of them with their 5-year-old daughter who's going to be highly amused by the sight of me on this plinth. I've got a whole bunch of supporters who I don't know who'll be down below. And I say I'm not quite sure how it's all going to develop. I enjoy doing things that are out of the ordinary. I enjoy injecting a random element into my life occasionally. That's part of what makes life worthwhile. I mean, there are very broad philosophical questions about what does make life worthwhile, and I'm not convinced. I say I have grave doubts about the mess that we've created in all sorts of different ways. But one has to get something out of it while one's around.
Have you got any more trips planned?
Not at the moment. I could in theory afford them, but it would be using up my savings. And also, I mean, sometimes it's making a virtue of necessity, but I know that, I mean, I've made a few too many long-haul flights in my life to really justify them to myself. But I mean, I probably will go away once or twice. Also, I have mild diabetes. It's not anything that's inhibited me. And I've been, you know, backpacking around Asia for the last 10, 15 years since I was diagnosed. But at some point in the future, I may not be able to make trips, which is why every now and then I feel I've got to make another long trip, you know, to make sure while I'm still physically capable of that sort of thing. India, Southeast Asia, most likely. I mean, other parts of the world like that.
What is it about Southeast Asia which really...
I don't know. I mean, if people say that sort of thing. And, I went to India for the first time in 1985. A two-month trip. The organisation I worked for was sufficiently flexible that I was able to put together a two-month trip. And I assumed it would be a one-off. I mean, somehow it seemed everyone had to go to India at some point in their life and sort of try and make sense of the place. So I went off there. And in my usual way, when I've been to India, I've been dashing around every conceivable interesting, you know, monument and architectural site and all the rest of it. I packed a hell of a lot. I packed too much into those 8 weeks. And it was very interesting. I gave no great thought to it beyond that. But then a year later, I had the chance, you know, I had another 6 weeks spare. So I went back there and I did the same thing 2 years after that and found that I was sort of getting more interest in it by the present. And then by the late 80s, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. I was thinking of quitting work, I was thinking of doing something else, and as a sort of halfway house, I was able to go down to part-time hours at work. And I went back to university and did a degree in non-European art history, effectively. I mean, it had a slightly different title at SOAS in London, with a specialisation in India. Sometimes one's areas of interest just happen, and that's what happened in this case. After that, I went back to India for a fourth time with a great deal more knowledge, and that gave me more incentive to go back in the future here. And I went to Southeast Asia because that fitted in with my other studies. And so it's really that I became interested in the art, followed it up, and it was also an area where I could afford to buy little pieces which were not, you know, completely impossible. And I've now got a very interesting collection. I spent the last 6 months going into the British Museum one day a week to study some of the sort of little bronzes that never get seen in public, and I've almost become the leading expert on the bronzes that nobody wants.
Have they got a nice collection of bronzes?
It's curious actually, because they've got great pieces. They've got individual works which are worth far, far more than my entire collection on their own. But they've also got 400 or 500 things of the sort that I collect, you know, relatively late, relatively small, petty items. And they're not really any better than my collection. I mean, but they're interesting because some of them are collected 100 or 200 years ago. And one therefore can pinpoint them more precisely as to what they are and when they were collected and so on. And it's certainly given me an interesting angle on the things that I've got, and I've been photographing them and taking notes. So when I say literally, because it's an area that it's not that I've got any sort of massive expertise, but it's an area that nobody else is particularly interested in. And as a result, I'm becoming almost more knowledgeable about those items than the museum curators are, because they're, you know, they don't take anything serious, since it's more about 500 or 1,000 years old.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not really. I'm going to see what happens now.
Thank you very much indeed.